You are listening to Radio I, your source for printed news and information. This service is intended for listeners who are blind, visually impaired, or have other disabilities that prevent them from reading. All materials are read as written and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of Radio I. For further information about this service, please call 859-422-6390 or visit our website at www.radioeye.org. That's www.radioeye.org.
Welcome to the reading of the Courier Journal for Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023. Which is brought to our Louisville listeners via Louisville Public Media. As a reminder, Radio I is a reading service intended for people who are blind or have other disabilities that make it difficult to read printed material. Your reader for today is Angie Mims. We start with the weather forecast through Sunday from the WHAS 11 First Alert Storm Team. Today, high 83, warm with a lot of sun. Tonight, low 60, a clear sky. Wednesday, high 83, low 54, ample sunshine. Thursday, high 73, low 49, cooler but still dry. Friday, high 76, low 52, a bright end to the week. Saturday, high 78, low 54, mostly sunny. And Sunday, high 80, low 55, showers possible late. Now for your local forecast from staff meteorologist Sam Gabrielli. We will pick up sunshine each and every day this week. Thanks to a developing ridge, highs will stay warm both today and tomorrow, with most spots hitting the 80s. Expect a clear night ahead. The next shot of rain may arrive late in the weekend. A weak low-pressure center will meander along the Carolinas, bringing a few showers Sunday night through Memorial Day. The almanac for Louisville on Sunday. Temperature, high 78, low 52. Normal high 79. Normal low 60. Record high 94 in 1941. Record low 38 in 1883. Precipitation Sunday 0 inches. Month to date 4.06 inches. Normal month to date 3.71 inches. Year-to-date, 21.90 inches. Normal year-to-date, 19.91 inches. The pollen count from the National Allergy Bureau. Grass, high. Weeds, absent. Trees, high. Molds, absent. Air quality. Yesterday, moderate. Today, good. Sun and moon. Tuesday, sunrise, 6:26 a.m. Sunset, 8:53 p.m. Moonrise, 9:23 a.m. Moonset, 12:15 a.m. Wednesday, sunrise, 6:26 a.m. Sunset, 8:54 p.m. Moonrise, 10:22 a.m. Moon set, 1 a.m. Moon phases. First quarter, May 27th. Full moon, June 3rd. Last quarter, June 10th. And new moon, June 18th. Weather history. Downburst winds on May 23rd, 1984, caused $150,000 in damage in Monroe and Pike counties of Pennsylvania. Such winds can be as destructive as some tornadoes. Now for Tuesday's headlines. Grocery merger. How much savings? Kroger, Albertsons, seek regulatory approval for mega deal. by Alexander Coolidge from the Cincinnati Enquirer, USA Today Network. How much money will shoppers save at the cash register if Kroger and Albertsons win regulatory approval to merge? Likely knowing how controversial their proposed mega deal might be, Kroger executives from the start stressed the takeover will save consumers money. They've given a big number to back it up, $500 million. That outsized figure may prove persuasive as U.S. consumers struggle to adopt following nearly 2 years of the worst inflation the country has seen since the early 1980s. Also, the potential savings to consumers has also been one of the primary considerations of U.S. regulators at the Federal Trade Commission in evaluating large mergers for decades. Announced last fall, the $25 billion proposal would be one of the largest retail mergers in history. The deal would give Kroger nearly 5,000 stores and 700,000 workers before an undetermined number of divestitures. Consumer and union groups have opposed the deal, claiming it will hurt competition and ultimately raise prices and harm workers. Regulators have declined to comment as they decide whether to block it. Kroger executives have vowed to fight for the deal in court. Meanwhile, the pain of higher grocery prices has been real at the supermarket. The overall cost of food bought in stores for eating at home has risen 23% since March 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit America, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Any price relief would be welcome to shoppers, many of whom have been forced to cut back and change other habits. A. William Amon Adebayo, a 55-year-old single father of two, said the soaring cost of groceries has forced his family to make changes. "We've cut back on meat, gave up soda and sweets, except for grandma's cake," he said outside Kroger's downtown supermarket in Cincinnati. Analysts and industry watchers still caution that money won't reset grocery prices to levels before the COVID-19 pandemic. Kroger's big savings talk, like several other considerations in the deal, is more complicated than it seems. Let's break it down here. Will Kroger shoppers save money, and how much? Overall, yes, Kroger has promised to invest in savings or charging less on groceries, which will be paid for by synergies the grocer will reap by merging with rival Albertsons. It's actually part of how Kroger competes. Like rival discounter Walmart, Kroger lowers prices to attract more customers, which allows them to make up sales on volume. But how much will it impact the average shopper? $500 million is a big number. It's an eighth of the combined company's annual $3.7 billion in annual profits. It's a real investment by executives back into operations to grow sales and the overall operations. But relative to Kroger's and Albertson's combined $226 billion in annual sales, it's incremental, less than 0.25%. Those proposed savings averaged to about 22 cents for every $100 shoppers spent last year. Will all Kroger shoppers save something? Kroger did not respond to questions about how it would implement the proposed lower prices. In a statement, the company said past mergers with Harris Teeter and Roundy's allowed it to cut prices by $130 million and $100 million, respectively. Since 2003, Kroger has made strategic investments to bring down prices for our customers. Our business model is built on providing more value to attract more customers, the company said. Analysts contend the results may vary. Kroger is a high-low grocery store. Its business model is to always have several sales going on, which generates customer traffic and more shopping. So the retailer will always have sales and discounts in every store across its operations. Analysts and marketing pros say Kroger will likely invest the $500 million in lower prices in selected markets, namely more competitive regions where the grocer wants to grow or shore up market share. Some markets need more attention than others. Kroger does different things in different markets. It's never ending. North Coast research analyst Chuck Cerankosky told the Inquirer. To grab the attention of the customers they want, Kroger will also likely cut prices on selected items rather than across the board. For example, lower prices on Tide detergent or Coca-Cola might lure more shoppers that end up buying the rest of their groceries at Kroger. The strategy is discounted items will draw customers who do other shopping, where the store makes up the difference, said Mark Bergen, the chair of marketing at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management. I may not make money on that sale item, but now you're in my store buying my other items, he said. Will Kroger shoppers in Louisville save money? Where will Kroger offer the best deals? Hard to say. Kroger is not saying where it will lower prices, but analysts say the company will likely concentrate the savings where it wants to win more market share. Kroger dominates the greater Cincinnati and northern Kentucky region, selling nearly half the groceries in the metro area, according to Tampa-based Tracker Chain Store Guide. It sells more than twice the groceries of the region's number two grocer, Walmart. That would suggest Kroger might not have to try as hard to keep customers here. Kroger also has a heavy footprint in the Louisville metro area, according to data from Business of Business. And yet, Florida-based rival Publix Supermarkets is said to be eyeing the region, which might force Kroger to guard its home turf with more competitive prices. Patricia Parsley, 53, said she'd welcome any relief on her grocery bill, even though her kids are grown and out of the house. She, too, has cut back. I gave up organic milk, soda, and I'm not buying name brands, she said, adding she reins in spending by shopping with a list. What's behind Kroger's discount strategy? 20 years ago, Walmart won a price war with rival discounter Kmart, which filed bankruptcy and began a steep decline. Several supermarket chains also attempted to compete against Walmart on price and sputtered. But Kroger chose a different strategy. It cut its prices enough to neutralize cost as the only factor for shoppers. Like Target in the discount sector, Kroger made itself thrifty enough while offering other advantages, more varieties of food, and closer and better staffed stores. The strategy has worked. Kroger's sales have nearly tripled from $52 billion in 2002 to $148 billion in 2022. Meanwhile, its gross margin shows it's collecting less overall money for each dollar of groceries sold. The company's gross margin was 27% of sales 20 years ago. Last year, it was 21.4%. Customers look to us to provide high-quality, affordable groceries, particularly today. Kroger and Albertsons CEOs Rodney McMullen and Vivek Sankaran wrote in a recent letter defending their proposal. At Kroger, our business strategy is to lower prices year over year. Where is Kroger getting the money for these promised discounts? Kroger expects it can generate an additional $1 billion in lower costs and improved efficiency each year after it closes the deal and operations are integrated. The companies expect to achieve synergies largely through improved sourcing, optimization of manufacturing and distribution networks, and technology investment, Kroger and Albertsons said in the merger announcement. Kroger's plans for improved sourcing have drawn a lot of concern from smaller competitors. The National Grocers Association, a Washington, D.C.-based trade association representing 1,500 smaller independent grocer retailers and wholesalers, fears the Kroger deal could swamp small grocers' communities with more stores offering cheaper goods while their supply costs go up. Michael Needler, Jr., the CEO of Findlay-based Fresh Encounter, Inc., which bought Northern Kentucky's Remke Markets in 2017, testified about small grocers' concerns about the proposal before a Senate committee last year. He said big grocers not only have more stores, but use their size to demand low prices from suppliers that smaller operators can't ever obtain, even if they partner with other small grocers. The grocery sector is suffering from increasing concentration and unchecked buyer power by dominant retail chains who force suppliers to discriminate against independent grocers, he said. Needler warned whatever discounts shoppers enjoy could be short-lived if Kroger-Albertsons merger proves anti-competitive, adding, "When their independent competitors get driven out of business, they just increase their margins and charge higher prices." When will food prices return to pre-pandemic normal? Likely never. Grocers will continue to have sales and discounts, but the overall price of food at supermarkets have risen and isn't likely to retreat significantly. While inflation does flatten out and even go negative for periods, it generally goes up. I don't see overall food prices going back to 2019 levels. There are still many inflationary forces at play, David Ortega, a food economist at Michigan State University, said. He predicted food prices will continue to rise, but the rate of increases will slow down. Ortega noted the U.S. Department of Agriculture predicts inflation at the supermarket, food at home inflation, will climb 6.6% for 2023. High inflation, which began with supply disruptions and spikes in demand from consumer hoarding, kept going as fuel prices and commodity costs jumped, Ortega said. Putin's invasion of Ukraine, which knocked out farming in a major European food exporter, and economic embargoes kept prices moving up. America hasn't seen inflation at the supermarket like this since the oil shocks of 1973-74 and 1978-79. Economists say overall inflation is still driving prices higher, but at a lower rate. The hope is inflation will flatten out to a more normal rate of increase. That appears to be beginning to happen in supermarket aisles. Food for home consumption was up 7.1% in April compared to the same month a year ago, according to the latest data. That figure was 13.5% in August when supermarket inflation peaked. Next, program can help you avoid eviction. Mediation strategy launched in Louisville by Bailey Loosemore. Every week, hundreds of eviction cases make their way through Jefferson District Court, where struggling renters are often ordered to move out while some landlords never receive the money they're owed. But it doesn't have to be that way. A new program from Louisville Metro Government is aiming to resolve rental issues before they ever make it to a docket, allowing property owners to save money on court costs while keeping evictions off tenants' records. The Eviction Mediation Program, which quietly launched at the beginning of April, is being funded with $2 million from the city's American Rescue Plan allocation and is similar to programs already showing success in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. It's expected to run as a pilot through at least June 2024, said Marilyn Harris, director of Develop Louisville. A mediation program also recently started in Lexington, where city officials committed $1.9 million in federal funding to services provided by Legal Aid of the Bluegrass and the Kentucky Equal Justice Center. It's been well documented that every eviction on your record reduces your quality of housing, even if a judge dismisses it, said Harris, who initially proposed starting an eviction mediation program in early 2020, just before the pandemic. What we want to do is encourage landlords to come through mediation, not have to pay to file an eviction, not have to pay to hire an attorney, and hopefully both parties get made whole through the mediation. Louisville is contracting with local company Resolve Restorative Practices to implement its program, which is free to both landlords and tenants. For the pilot, mediation services will be offered only in cases involving past due payments, and rental assistance will be available to tenants who have not already reached their 18-month limit through the Federal Emergency Rental Assistance Program, Harris said. Here's how the program works. 1. Landlords can request mediation through the resource page at stop-myeviction.org. 2. Landlords and tenants will both be asked to fill out an online assessment ahead of their appointment. 3. The parties will meet with a mediator in person, typically within 2 weeks of requesting a session. 4. If a resolution is reached, both parties will sign an agreement to hold up their end of the bargain. 5. If a resolution is not reached, landlords will receive priority on the next Friday's eviction court docket. Megan McGinn, a project manager involved in distributing rent assistance through Louisville's Office of Housing, said eviction cases currently take more than 4 weeks to reach the district court docket, and going through mediation should be quicker and more cost-effective, especially for small landlords. Shannon Floyd, principal mediator for Resolve Restorative Practices, said she knows it will take some convincing to get property managers and owners on board. But as she's already asked some, what do you have to lose? When you have an eviction on your housing record, it's almost like having a felony, said Floyd, a licensed social worker who's been a mediator since 2020. It's going to forever impact you, where you live, how you live. We also see it from the perspective of you've come into a contract with this landlord and signed off on it, and you are bound to it, just like you, the landlord, has bills to pay too. When we come at that table, we see both aspects. Both sides are humanized. That's the whole goal. Floyd said she's hired 3 mediators to handle eviction cases for the city's pilot program. And while interest from landlords has been slow to start, she's confident the program will help reduce the number of evictions filed in Louisville. I have high expectations for us, she said. Next, CEO Farley says Ford plans to cut costs, improve quality. By Tom Krischer, Associated Press, Dateline, Dearborn, Michigan. Ford CEO Jim Farley says his company is remaking itself by cutting costs, raising quality, and offering software, services, and new vehicles that will make profit margins among the best in the industry. Farley and other executives gave details on how it will get there over the next few years during a Capital Markets Day event Monday near its Dearborn, Michigan headquarters. One way is to reduce investment in hyper-competitive market segments, such as 2-row smaller SUVs, Farley told industry analysts. The company, he said, has been stuck in a box with thin profit margins, weak growth, and low stock valuation. Ford, Farley said, will emphasize software and services as well as iconic vehicles such as pickup trucks, large SUVs, commercial vehicles, and advanced second-generation electric vehicles. He said the company is eliminating waste to close a cost gap with the best in the industry, with a lean, disciplined operating system that reaches into all Ford factories. By focusing on software and Ford's strengths and products, the company won't be as vulnerable to a downturn as in the past. He said the company has let complexity overrun our business as we tried to be all things to all people. Farley says Ford will be competing differently, going for tailored ownership experiences rather than jockeying for slivers of market share. He said Ford will go to non-negotiated vehicle prices. Ford has said it will get to a 10% pre-tax profit margin in 2026. It reiterated 2023 full-year guidance of $9 billion to $11 billion in adjusted pre-tax profits. Farley said the company has even greater margin ambitions. To get there, Ford says it will cut costs by reducing the number of parts in its vehicles, as well as cutting warranty and recall expenses by boosting quality. But Farley said he doesn't see reductions in the number of factory employees or among engineers and other office workers. The company predicted it would sell 5.6 million vehicles in 2026 as global sales recover, and it will need workers to design and produce them, Farley said. Ford sold roughly 4.2 billion vehicles last year. Farley has long complained about Ford's high retail and warranty costs, and Kumar Galhotra, president of Ford Blue, the company's internal combustion unit, said the company is making changes to reduce those to improve profit margins. Rather than testing the new Super Duty pickup to a particular standard, the company tested it until parts and systems failed, he said. Now Ford is finding the eventual weak point and eliminating it, prolonging vehicle life, Galhotra said. Ford also is focusing on reducing the number of vehicle parts and on the stability of parts supply companies, he said. For example, by the time Ford rolls out a new version of the F-150 pickup this year, it will have cut 2,400 parts from the existing model. We have some chronically inefficient Tier 1 and Tier 2 suppliers, Galhotra said. Some have caused an unstable flow of parts, he said, adding that Ford has worked with 125 key suppliers to stabilize their operations. If the present supplier is not on a path to a permanent solution, we're resourcing the business, he said. A study by Plant Moran released Monday showed that Ford's working relations with parts suppliers has declined dramatically since 2020. Ford said its new or revamped electric vehicle manufacturing plants will be far more efficient, with nearly 30% less labor overhead than current large internal combustion vehicle plants. But Farley said that doesn't mean fewer factory workers because they'll be needed to make batteries and other EV parts. Ford Motor Company also cut deals with a number of companies to supply its rapidly growing electrical vehicle division, Ford Model E, according to a flurry of announcements Monday. Ford will get more than 100,000 metric tons of lithium hydroxide from Albemarle, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Compass Minerals International announced a multi-year deal to supply Ford with up to 40% of the battery-grade lithium carbonate coming from its project in Utah. Energy Source Minerals will supply the carmaker with lithium hydroxide from a new site in Imperial Valley, California. And Nemaska Lithium, a Canadian miner, will supply Ford with 13,000 tons of lithium hydroxide annually for 11 years. Because the materials are coming from the U.S. and Canada, it ensures that Ford's electric vehicles will qualify for new federal tax credits, making them more competitive. Ford has split itself into three business units: Ford Blue, Ford Model E for electric vehicles and digital products, and Ford Pro, the company's commercial vehicle business. I'm not here to tell you that we're undervalued, Farley said Monday. You make your own decision. Shares of Ford fell just under 1% in midday trading Monday. This concludes readings for the first sections of the Courier Journal for Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023. Stay tuned for the Metro section to follow immediately. Your reader has been Angie Mims.
This is Radio I Executive Director Tom Lewis, just taking a moment to say thanks. Thanks to the generosity of our supporters, Radio I raised more than $5,300 during Kentucky Gives Day on Tuesday. That equates to a full year of radio service for nearly 180 listeners. A tremendous thank you to our matching donors who were so key in Tuesday's fundraising success. Kentucky Gives Day is the annual online giving challenge for nonprofit organizations in the Commonwealth. If you missed the challenge but would still like to support Radio I, please visit www.radioi.org and click on the Donate tab, or call us at 859-422-6390. Again, thanks.
Now to continue reading from the Courier Journal for May 23rd, starting with the Metro section. Your reader is Chris Greco. We will start with the obituaries. We read only the name, age, and location. If you would like further information on any of the obituaries, please call us during the weekdays at 859-422-6390, and we will be glad to read the entire obituary for you. I will repeat that number at the end of the listings. Jenny Stone Banks, 75, Louisville. If you would like further information about any of the listings today, call us during the weekdays at 859-422-6390, and we will be glad to read the entire item to you. Bashir touts record low jobless rate. Bruce Schreiner, Associated Press, Frankfort, Kentucky. Kentucky's jobless rate sank to its lowest level ever last month, Democratic Governor Andy Beshear said Thursday in touting a booming economy at the start of his general election campaign for a second term. The state's seasonally adjusted preliminary unemployment rate dipped to 3.7% in April, down 0.1 percentage points from the prior month, the governor said at his weekly news conference. It's the lowest monthly unemployment rate on record in the Bluegrass State, he said. Our record-breaking economy is what can happen when we put politics aside and focus on moving the state forward and doing what is best for all of our families, Bashir said. The historically low jobless rate comes as the governor shifts his re-election campaign into high gear against Republican challenger Daniel Cameron in what could be the nation's most hotly contested election this year, one that could hinge on pocketbook issues. The matchup could provide insight about voter sentiment heading into 2024 elections to determine control of the White House and Congress. Cameron and other Republicans say the governor takes credit for pro-growth policies championed by the GOP-dominated legislature, and they point to sluggish workforce participation rates that have left some businesses struggling to find enough workers, as Republicans try to counter Beshear's rosy economic message that includes a record-setting pace of economic development during his term. Fewer people in Kentucky are working now than when the governor took office, said State Republican Party spokesman Sean Southard, citing federal statistics. The governor continues to use his podium to mislead Kentuckians about the state of the economy under his and Joe Biden's leadership, Southard said in a statement. He said that Cameron will promote a culture that rewards work. Republicans have also tried to link the governor to high inflation that has marked Biden's term as president. Kentuckians went to the polls Tuesday to nominate Bashir and Cameron, the state's attorney general, to top the November statewide ballot in what will be a tumultuous showdown for governor. 2 days later, Bashir opened his regular news conference by touting the record low unemployment rate, as well as reprising past job growth announcements and updating his economic development record. The governor takes his message on the road Friday when he starts a bus tour across Kentucky. The state's persistently low jobless rate reflects its recovery from the economic depths of the COVID-19 pandemic. In April 2020, Kentucky's employment rate surged to 16.5% amid virus-related shutdowns. Last month, the governor announced the statewide job growth had surpassed pre-pandemic levels, with nearly 46,000 more jobs than in February 2020. Since his term started in late 2019, Bashir said he has announced more than 852 private sector new location and expansion projects totaling nearly $29 billion in investments, as well as about 46,000 new full-time jobs. That record could give him an advantage, barring unforeseen developments in the economy. If the race is based on the economy and on bread and butter pocketbook issues, that's much better for Governor Bashir, GOP political consultant T.J. Letifek said Thursday. But the situation varies, with some areas lagging behind in employment opportunities, especially in coal-producing counties suffering from the loss of mining jobs, he said. Cameron has touted his support for coal production and blasted national Democratic policies that he blames for the industry's hardships. In those pockets, Beshear will have to work hard to communicate with those voters, Letafic said. Is Louisville the best place to live in Kentucky? Ray Johnson. The Kentucky Derby, culinary offerings, and low cost of housing landed Louisville on the list of the 150 best places to live in the U.S. Louisville ended up right in the middle of the list at number 75, scoring a 6.3 rating overall based on quality of life, job market, value of living, and desire to live somewhere, according to the ranking from U.S. News & World Report. Derby City was sandwiched between Augusta, Georgia at number 74 and South Bend, Indiana at number 76. Bigger wasn't better on this year's list. Green Bay, Wisconsin, with a population of around 107,000, came in at number 1, while San Juan, Puerto Rico, with a population around 342,000, came in at number 150. In total, three Kentucky cities made it onto the list: Lexington, number 34, Ashland, number 66, Louisville, number 75. Here's a quick breakdown of how each Kentucky city did. Lexington. Lexington scored an overall 6.5 out of 10 points and scored highest in the value category with a 7.4, followed by quality of life at 7, highest of the three cities. The small city is serious about college basketball, said U.S. News. The horse capital of the world is home to two horse racing tracks, including the ever-popular Keeneland. Lexington also offers value for potential homeowners with lower housing costs than similar metro areas due to the ebb and flow of college students at the University of Kentucky. That makes housing abundant and inexpensive, although costs have risen in recent years, the organization reported. Ashland. Ashland made the list as part of the Huntington-Ashland, West Virginia-Kentucky-Ohio metro area, also known as the Tri-States in that region, with a 6.3 overall score. However, it scored 4.9 on desirability factor. Ashland scored highest of all three cities on value with an 8.2, its highest score on the ranking with an average housing price that's less than half of the national average, according to 2021 data. U.S. News says it's never boring in the tri-state area either. From local and state parks to weekend festivals throughout the year, there's something for everyone. Louisville. Derby City came in at number 75 overall with its highest score in the value of living category, collecting 7.5 points. According to 2021 data, Louisville's housing market is a better value than similarly sized metro areas. The city's housing cost, $232,706, was more than $132,000 less than the national average. Desirability was Louisville's biggest hurdle, scoring 5.3 based on a survey U.S. News did of about 3,500 people. The group collected data mostly from the survey, but it also considered net migration, weather, and establishments to population ratio. Of course, U.S. News bragged on Louisville for its biggest attraction, the Kentucky Derby, which brings visitors from all over the world. It also mentioned our culinary expertise and support of independent businesses, but folks have to learn pronunciation to be considered a real Louisvillian, the report said. Woman in death case seeks new venue. Boy's body was found in suitcase in Indiana. Associated Press, Salem, Indiana. A Louisiana woman charged in the death of a boy whose body was found last year inside a suitcase in rural southern Indiana is seeking a change of venue, arguing that public outrage over the child's death would prevent her from getting a fair trial. Dawn Coleman's attorney, Ryan Bauer, filed the venue change request on her behalf Monday. He contends the Shreveport, Louisiana woman would not receive a fair trial in southern Indiana's Washington County due to public hostility against her, outrage over the boy's death, and media coverage, WTHR-TV reported. A hearing is set for June 1st on the change of venue request for Coleman, who was arrested in San Francisco in October in connection with the death of 5-year-old Cairo Amir Jordan of Atlanta, Georgia. She's charged with aiding, inducing or causing murder, neglect of a dependent result in death, and obstruction of justice. A felony murder arrest warrant was issued in November for Cairo's mother, Dewan Ludi Anderson of Atlanta. She remains at large. Authorities allege that Coleman helped Anderson dispose of Cairo's body in April 2022. Court documents say that he died in Kentucky and his body was dumped in Indiana. His body was found inside a Hart suitcase emblazoned with a distinctive Las Vegas design that a mushroom hunter discovered in a heavily wooded area off of a dead-end road. An autopsy found that Cairo died from vomiting and diarrhea that led to dehydration, Indiana State Police said. Investigators said the boy had died within a week prior to his body's discovery. Poll. Biden weak on economy, guns. Handling of hot-button issues earns low ratings. Amar Madhani and Emily Swanson, Associated Press, Washington. As President Joe Biden embarks on his re-election campaign, just 33% of American adults say they approve of his handling of the economy, and only 24% say national economic conditions are in good shape, according to a new poll from the Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Public approval of Biden's handling of the economy remains low in a time of high inflation, a difficult housing market, and concerns about a potential U.S. government debt default. American opinion is also gloomy about Biden's efforts on gun policy and immigration, with only 31% saying they approve of the president's performance on those hot-button issues. Overall, 40% say they approve of the way Biden is doing his job, similar to where his approval rating has stood for much of the past year and a half. Zoe Mosqueda, 24, who does not identify with any political party, said her family is ready to buy its first home, but with the average mortgage interest rate hovering around 6.9%, that goal, at least for now, is out of reach. Mosqueda of West Texas said she has also been frustrated with Biden's handling of gun policy and said he's fallen short in his campaign promise to implement a fairer immigration policy. A recent spate of mass shootings around the country, including this month's shooting at an Allen, Texas mall that left 8 victims dead and 7 others wounded, has left her wishing that Biden and lawmakers in Washington would do more to address the scourge of gun violence. Even among Democrats, the poll finds only about half approve of his handling of immigration and gun policy. Everything feels a bit crazy right now in this economy, as Mosqueda, a mother of two who works at a boutique and is looking to open her own business, said in explaining her disapproval of Biden's performance. My older daughter is in school now, and I just worry that this lack of gun policy could affect her. Biden returned late Sunday from a visit to Hiroshima, Japan for the annual G7 summit. The summit was shadowed by the Biden administration's negotiations with Republican lawmakers to raise the U.S. borrowing authority to prevent a default in early June that could have severe impact on the global economy. Before departing for Japan, Biden canceled scheduled stops in Papua New Guinea and Australia so he could return to the U.S. to focus on the debt limit talks. It would be a total catastrophe for the country if they don't agree to do something, said Bob Vaught, a retired auto parts warehouse manager in St. Petersburg, Florida. He said he strongly disapproves of Biden's handling of the economy. Vaught, who lives on his Social Security benefit, said inflation is taking a toll on his personal finances. The Biden administration oversaw two of the bigger Social Security cost of living adjustments in recent decades, with a 5.9% increase that took effect in 2022 and 8.7% in 2023. But Vaught said that's not enough to keep up with a rental increase at the trailer park where he lives with his father and the rising costs of food and other basic necessities. Vaught, an independent who typically votes Republican but voted for Biden in 2020, said he's also been frustrated by the out-of-control rise in illegal crossings by migrants at the U.S. southern border. In the 2022 budget year, which ended in September, agents apprehended immigrants a record 2.38 million times at the southern border. Coronavirus restrictions implemented under President Donald Trump, which were known as Title 42, allowed border officials to turn away migrants to help stop the spread of COVID-19. The restrictions recently ended. When Title 42 was used to deny asylum more than 2.8 million times, it carried no legal consequences and therefore encouraged repeat attempts by migrants to enter the United States. Border Patrol agents returned to pre-pandemic immigration laws on May 11th that imposed stiffer penalties on migrants who enter the U.S. without permission than the emergency health order did. Despite his frustrations with Biden, Vaught said he'd probably vote for the Democrat again if Trump wins the Republican nomination. I would agree with about half of Trump's policies, but I think the guy is a liar and is so arrogant, Vaught said. If those were the only two candidates, I'd still have to vote Biden. John Billman, 79, of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, said Biden doesn't get enough credit for passage of the $1 trillion infrastructure bill and $280 billion CHIPS Act aimed at boosting the U.S. semiconductor history, or the historically low unemployment rate. The unemployment rate stands at 3.4%. Biden underperforms on the economy even among Democrats. 61% approve of him on the issue, compared with 75% for his job overall. Democrats feel even more dour about the current condition of the nation's economy, though they continue to be more likely than Republicans to say the country is headed in the right direction, 36% versus 7%, or to rate the economy as good, 41% versus 7%. Some Democratic respondents who approve of the president's performance said they felt flummoxed by life in post-pandemic America and what often seems like a total abandonment of bipartisanship in Washington. Karen DeAndrea, 64, a Democrat from Port Lucie, Florida, was among the millions of Americans who lost their jobs at the beginning of the pandemic. She was able to land a new job at a tech startup, but was recently laid off as that sector is going through some of the most significant cost-cutting since the Great Recession. I think people with the same mindset as me feel our best days are behind us, said DeAndrea, who approves of Biden's performance but believes the country is moving in the wrong direction. Republicans like to say they want to make America great again. I think things can be wonderful now, but we've got to work together. The poll of 1,680 adults was conducted May 11th to the 15th using a sample drawn from NORC's probability-based America Speak panel, designed to be representative of the U.S. population. The margin of sampling error for all respondents is plus or minus 3.4 percentage points. Economists, inflation to stay high this year. Christopher Rugeber, Associated Press, Washington. The Federal Reserve will make only modest progress in its fight against inflation for the rest of this year, even while keeping its benchmark interest rate at a 16-year high, a group of business economists predict in a survey released Monday. The National Association for Business Economic Survey of 45 economists found that the median forecast is for inflation to average 4.2% this year, up from a 3.9% forecast in the group's previous survey in February. That is far above the Fed's inflation target of 2%. The findings reflect a survey of economists from businesses, trade associations, and academia. The persistence of high inflation is likely the main reason the business economists expect the Fed to keep its key rate at its current level of roughly 5.1%, its highest point in 16 years. That is a quarter point above the estimate from the NABE's February survey and is a sign that the economists don't expect the Fed to cut rates later this year, in contrast to many Wall Street investors who have priced in rate cuts. Federal officials agreed to raise their key rate to that level when they met earlier this month. On Friday, though, Chair Jerome Powell signaled that the central bank will now likely pause its rate hike campaign. The Fed's 10 rate increases since March 2022 have led mortgage rates to nearly double, elevated the cost of auto loans, credit card borrowing and business loans, and heightened the risk of a recession. The business economists expect the U.S. economy to grow a mediocre 1.2% this year, though that would be higher than the 0.8% growth they predicted in the February survey. At the same time, nearly three-fifths of the survey respondents said the economy will probably fall into a recession over the next 12 months. Most of those who expect a recession expect it to begin this year. Report: El Niño can cost global economy trillions. Doyle Rice, USA Today. El Niño can have a devastating impact on the world economy, scientists reported Thursday. In the years it forms, El Niño triggers wide-ranging changes in weather and climate patterns that result in a potpourri of disasters, according to a study published Thursday. The study is among the first to look at the long-term costs of El Niño and its project losses, and it projects losses that far exceed those estimated by previous research. Costs in the trillions of dollars. The economic cost of the natural climate pattern can soar into the trillions of dollars around the globe. The 1982-83 El Nino led to $4.1 trillion in global income losses, while the 1997-98 El Nino cost about $5.7 trillion, the study suggests. These figures are huge and come close to the total economic cost of the Great Recession in 2007 and 2008. Some of the world's poorest nations take the hardest hit during and after El Niños, and climate change will only exacerbate the problems, the study says. Researchers found that El Niño was particularly hard on nations such as Peru and other tropical countries. We can say with certainty that societies and economies absolutely do not just take a hit and recover, said study lead author Christopher Callahan, a doctoral candidate in geography at Dartmouth University, adding that the data suggested that economic downturns after El Niño could last 14 years or more. What is El Niño? El Niño is a natural climate pattern where seawater in the central and eastern tropical Pacific Ocean is warmer than average. El Niño and its counterpart, La Niña, can influence storms and weather patterns around the world, including hurricanes. El Niños occur on average about every 3 to 5 years and vary in strength, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The last strong El Niño was in 2016. Here in the United States, El Niños typically result in wetter, warmer winters for the West Coast and a milder hurricane season for the Atlantic seaboard. Worldwide, typical El Niño impacts, there is an enhanced probability of below normal precipitation during India's monsoon season. Eastern Australia and southern Africa see a greater probability of below normal rainfall. East Africa and the west coast of South America are more likely to have above normal precipitation. How much could the next El Niño cost? Researchers estimate that the potentially big El Niño, predicted for 2023 alone, could hold the global economy back by as much as $3 trillion by 2029. The deck is potentially stacked for a really big El Niño, Callahan said. Our results suggest that there will likely be a major economic toll that depresses economic growth in tropical countries for potentially up to a decade. The result could be trillions of dollars in productivity lost globally relative to a world without this El Niño. Marshall Burke, an economist and environmental policy professor at Stanford University, who is not involved in the study, said the Dartmouth scientists make a compelling case that this has really slowed growth in severely affected countries like Peru and resulted in trillions of dollars of lost economic output around the world. This paper has certainly made me much more worried, Burke said. G20 officials meet in disputed Kashmir. Promoting tourism, Indiana conceals heavy security. Aziz Hussein, Associated Press. The delegates were to discuss topics like green tourism and destination management. Side events on ecotourism and the role of films in promoting tourist destinations also were scheduled. Sirinjar, India. Delegates from the Group 20 of Nations arrived in Indian-controlled Kashmir on Monday to participate in a tourism meeting condemned by China and Pakistan, as authorities significantly reduced visibility of the security in the disputed region's main city. The meeting, scheduled for late Monday, was the first significant international event in Kashmir since New Delhi stripped the Muslim-majority region of semi-autonomy in 2019. Indian authorities hoped the meeting would show that the controversial changes have brought peace and prosperity to the region. The delegates were to discuss topics like green tourism and destination management. Side events on ecotourism and the role of films in promoting tourist destinations were also included. On Monday, the region's main city of Srinagar appeared calm and roads had never been as clean. Most of the security checkpoints were removed or camouflaged with cubicle-like security posts made of G20 signs behind which security officials stood. Officials said hundreds of officers were specially trained for what they call invisible policing for the event. Shops in the city center also opened earlier than usual after several meetings between trade representatives and security officials. But authorities closed the main road leading to the convention center for civilian traffic and shut many schools in the city. Monday's measures contrasted starkly to the security imposed in the days before the event. A massive security cordon was placed around the venue on the shores of Dale Lake in Srinagar, with elite naval commandos patrolling in rubber boats in the water. The city's commercial center was spruced up with freshly blacktop roads leading to Lakeside Convention Center and power poles lit in the colors of India's national flag. We have the making of a unique meeting, India's chief coordinator for the G20, Harshvardhan Shringla, told reporters Sunday. He said the event would have the highest representation of foreign delegates in comparison to previous tourism meetings India held in the states of West Bengal and Gujarat earlier this year. Last week, the UN Special Rapporteur on Minority Issues, Ferdinand de Varenne, said the meeting would support a facade of normalcy while massive human rights violations continue in the region. India's mission at the U.S. Geneva and the UN in Geneva rejected the statement as baseless and unwarranted allegations. India's Tourism Secretary, Arvind Singh, told reporters Saturday that the meeting was not only to showcase its potential for tourism, but to also signal globally the restoration of stability and normalcy in the region. The region remains one of the world's most heavily militarized territories, with hundreds of thousands of Indian troops. In 1989, a violent separatist insurgency erupted in the region that sought independence or a merger with Pakistan. India replied with a brutal counterinsurgency, and tens of thousands of civilians, soldiers, and rebels have been killed in the conflict. India's crackdown intensified after 2018, when New Delhi took the region under its direct control. Since then, the territory's people and its media have been largely silenced. Authorities have seized scores of homes and arrested hundreds of people under stringent anti-terror laws. The government says such actions are necessary to stop what it calls a terror ecosystem. Authorities have also enacted new laws that critics and many Kashmirans fear could transform the region's demographics. The G20, made up of the world's largest economies, has a rolling presidency, with a different member setting priorities each year. India is steering the group in 2023. India has been promoting tourism in Kashmir as a sign of peace since the 2019 decision. But the region, known for rolling Himalayan foothills, has for decades been a major domestic tourist destination. Millions of visitors arrive in Kashmir every year and enjoy a strange peace kept by ubiquitous security checkpoints, armored vehicles, and patrolling soldiers. The mainstay of Kashmir's economy, however, continues to be agriculture, and the tourism industry contributes only about 7% to the region's GDP. China, with which India is locked in a military standoff along the most unmarked border in the Ladakh region, has boycotted the event. Pakistan, which controls a part of Kashmir, but, like India, claims the entire territory, has also slammed New Delhi for holding the meeting in Srinagar. Both have argued that such meetings can't be held in disputed territories. India has dismissed Pakistan's criticism, saying that the country is not even a member of the G20. Venmo to be officially available to teenagers, by Ken Sweet, Associated Press, New York. Teenagers will officially be allowed to open a Venmo account with their parents' permission, the company said Monday, expanding the popular social payments app to an age demographic that is likely to embrace it almost immediately. Using Venmo won't necessarily be new to a good number of teens. Parents often set up accounts for their children through their own accounts, which is a violation of Venmo's terms of service. There have been guides on the internet for some time showing parents how to create a child's account without Venmo penalizing them. This concludes excerpts from the Courier-Journal for May 23rd. Your reader today has been Chris Greco. Please stay tuned for continued programming on Radio I.